Hello, and welcome to Teen Talk Online.
Welcome to Teen Talk, brought to you by Contact Community Services. This program is dedicated to discussing your issues and promoting teen voices for good choices. We want to hear what you have to say, so call our listener comment line at 1-800-245-TEEN. That's 1-800-245-8336. Listen to us online. You can find a link to our Facebook page and on our website, teentalkradio.org.
The views and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to the hosts and guests. They do not reflect the views of the Teen Talk program or Contact Community Services. Hello and welcome to Teen Talk. I'm Dana, and today I'm joined by teen hosts Yanira, Kyla, and Domi. Our show topic today is racial inequality. And coming up, we'll discuss whether or not racial equality still exists in America. Are we thinking clearly about racial inequality in America? And how we should react when someone is loudly contradicting our personal beliefs. Now let's start out and go around by discussing if we feel whether or not racial equality still exists in America.
I feel that racial inequality does still exist in America. It's like a really big elephant in the room. And they try to block it out and cover it with all these other issues, but when little do you know, it is still, it's still present.
It certainly is, like you just said, it's a white elephant in the room, but I feel it's more hidden because we don't have civil rights movements or protests or anything like that constantly going on every single day in the news, it's been pushed down under the carpet, it's been swept down in a way that it's still there. Yes, we know it's there, but nobody's ready and willing to address it in the media or in the news, like actively just, hey, we're going to dedicate a whole night to this. It's just once in a while something pops up, once in a while it's shunned down, but it's not really in the spotlight.
I agree with that. I think that racial inequality is still present. It's just some people don't feel comfortable stepping up and trying to change it because they're afraid of hurting people's feelings or saying something that might be viewed as wrong. So people sometimes get afraid to stick up for what they believe in and to try to change the topic of racial inequality.
Yeah, and I definitely agree that it does exist, and I think that's the general consensus around the table here. But I certainly think it is more hidden, like Domi said, because we do have current events that come up and spark a discussion every once in a while, but until we're willing to really put our minds to it and recognize that it exists, then it's just always gonna sort of be pushed aside.
Would you agree that fear is one of the motives that drives people to not talking about it? Because everybody's afraid of, do I want to be the first person to speak out against something? Speaking out against something puts you in a position of attack. Because you can't be, unless you are, the holiest person, you can't really cast the first stone. So I feel like people are more scared of speaking out about this. TV shows and hosts will shun from talking about it because they don't want to be the one to start the debate. They want to be, if the debate was to be started, they would join in, certainly. But they don't want to be the ones beginning it or starting the talk about it.
I agree. Fear does play a really big role because, sometimes we, ourselves feel like, oh, I want to talk about this. But since society plays such a huge role and the people around you, their judgment nowadays has such a hard impact on you, you feel like you'd rather be, included and, you would kind of, hold your opinions in a sense. Not everyone, but that's how the majority of the people, feel. They want to be included. They don't want to be pushed away.
Absolutely. Well, today our guest joining us today is retired Syracuse City Court Judge Langston McKinney. Mr. McKinney, how do you feel about all the things we've said so far? How do you see racial inequality in America today?
I noticed when everyone responded to the question, the response was whether or not racial inequality still exists in America. And the reality is racial inequality is America, is now, always has been, and as far as I am concerned, always will be, in the absence of the political will of most of its people to say we want to rid our culture of this odious condition. We haven't come anywhere near that at all. America, these United States of America began, I just want to remind everybody here, with racial inequality directed towards the first Americans. That hasn't been eliminated. That has been reduced, but it hasn't been eliminated. And to a certain extent, the culture we live in thrives on the existence of people who are made to feel that they are inferior to other people. Our task, your task, is to try to make sure that those feelings are overcome as much as possible. And the way in which you can guarantee that it happens is to define that within the sphere of your influence and existence, no racial inequality exists. So there's the challenge.
Certainly.
I agree with you, like, 100%. In, like, our schools and stuff now, we're actually learning, like, I mean, we've already had a sense of it, but we're learning more of what, like, the truth of what happened and how deep the situation is and has been. And it's becoming more clear to us that it's still present because of all the new things that are occurring. And it's just, it was hidden for so long. And, like, I feel like now America or like society has like nothing else to do, so we're actually digging deeper and we're finding the truth that like everything is hidden from us. We're actually now finding the truth, and it's about time.
I certainly like how you mentioned that it's always been there, it's always been a part, it's never really gone away, it's just the form of it changed. And it brings me back to slavery is present in some countries today. Not many people know about it because it's not as vast as it was before. It may not be widely covered by the press or something, so it's not, you know, commonly seen everywhere. But the fact that it's always been around speaks volumes about both sides being affected, the side being affected and the side affecting. Because it means the side affecting has always been in charge, but it also means that the side being affected was either never in charge or has always just taken on that role as the lesser and less dominant power. So this, I certainly agree that we are the only ones who can make the change. And whether it will stay this way in the future, we don't know. It just depends on our generation and if everybody's willing to take up arms. But still, there's that constant, there's a cloud that follows people, that once you start addressing such issues, development stops at some point, because then you become that one person who is striving. It's almost seen as striving for superiority among one particular race, and people don't like that. So if we were to address it as teens or our generation right now, it would always seem like a takeover, it would seem like a revolution. And I'm not sure if America's ready for one of those yet. Are we ready for that?
For another one.
Another one.
I forget, we started with a revolution.
We started one, so we might have to, it would be another one. It certainly would be another one.
I'd like to go back to what you said of the United States being based off of racial inequality. Recently in my English class, we watched a film, Dances with Wolves. In that movie, they portray just a lack of communication between the Native Americans and the American soldiers. Do you think that that is still a problem today, that we just don't have the communication skills to put our opinions out there and like get the issue started?
I don't think that the problem is an unwillingness to communicate. It really is an inability to understand and appreciate the extent to which certain persons are privileged and how that privilege causes certain people to be insensitive, uncaring, racist, or whatever. It's privilege. And the privilege is something to be heavenly guarded. I think most people don't think about it, but if you step back and look at it, if you're privileged to do something and you believe that you're playing a zero-sum game, It means that any amount of privilege that you yield or that someone else gains is privilege that you lose. And so you want to maintain the privileges. And again, the history of the United States is there's always been a very privileged class of people here. All right? And nobody takes offense from what I say, hopefully. That privileged class has been white people. That's the reality. All right? And gains that black people have made, gains that Native Americans have made, gains that people of color have made, have been with the blessings of the privileged few who said, I can yield a little bit and share what I have with others and still live in a culture that I'm proud to live in, still live in a society that I want to make better and other people can make better, and extend the privileges to everyone there. And when we finish this thing about racial inequality, at some point in, not in my lifetime, maybe in yours or your grandkids' lifetime, we'll start talking about economic inequality and how to privilege, in an economic sense, are blind to, deaf to, insensitive to the needs and concerns of others who are not so privileged. I hope everybody agrees.
Yeah, certainly.
Absolutely. I like how you both mentioned not only blacks and whites' problems with racial inequality, because racial inequality is like most often associated with just blacks and whites. Like, as you said, there's that one superior class, and whoever isn't in that class is classified or like looked at against. And it's not just the superior class looking at the other races that way. The other races are looking at the superior class that way. Not everybody in these specific racial groups are how we see them, and you shouldn't live off of a stereotype. Everyone is different. And some people in that higher class or group of people understand and sympathize for the people that are actually going through like the racial profiles. So yeah, I do like how you guys mentioned that it's not just blacks and whites that are facing it. It's Latinos, Asians, every other group of people in the world, in America, wherever we're speaking, that holds like racial inequality and it's bad.
I don't know if it's too early for this, but can we talk about the racial inequalities that we witness today? I, for example, have witnessed when doing college applications, I go to a predominantly white school, and everybody will always go, you don't have to worry about going to school because you're going to fill the quota anyways for the schools you apply to. And at first it was shocking to me that people would say that. But then again, it demeans my work. It means that all the years I put into high school are nothing because, oh, I'm just there to fill the quota because somebody has to do it anyway. They need Chinese students, they need foreign students, and hey, if we throw in one college student in there and we're diverse. It's as diverse as it gets. But it's nobody talks about it, but it's silently there. Even when you go to employment, something lingers on. They will ask for race. You don't have to check the box. Not checking the box might work against you, or it might work for you. It depends on what office and what you're applying for. And if you do check the box, sometimes it will work in your favor or against your favor. I found this with college applications, is sometimes when you check the box of your race, it gets you more scholarships. But at the same time, somebody else takes a double look at it and goes, maybe we'll take another look at an application later, and it goes in a different pile. So there's definitely a struggle that many people don't, we know it's there. Everybody understands that it's there. We know why it's there, but nobody really goes down to the root and try to figure out how can we change this.
You asked if we've experienced racial inequalities ourselves. I mean, I have personally, and like you said, being in a very highly educated mixed African American, I too face it myself. I feel like when I, and this is not everywhere I go, this is, you know, just I've experienced it. We all have if we were in these groups. I feel like sometimes when I speak in some of my classes, you know, a lot of the kids they don't really have the higher mindset. They're more stuck in the group of, oh, I'm a part of this racial group or this way of life, so I'm going to keep doing that. Me, on my like my side, I felt like maybe I should step out the box and show that our race has potential. So I'm in, you know, the higher classes, and I feel like most of the time when I say stuff, it people look at me weird or as if what I'm going to say isn't going to make sense. Little do they know I have the same educational standards as them. Majority of the time I'm higher, not to be conceited or anything, but it's the truth. I'm just as equal as them, but sometimes I feel like because of my difference, I'm looked at really weird, and I don't like it at all.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, white people, you know, not to generalize, but it's hard not to use that terminology when talking about like this, stuff like this. They, you know, they will look down on people of color sometimes and think, oh, they're not as educated, or, you know, their work ethic isn't as good, which, I mean, that attitude dates back a long time ago, like Reconstruction era America, which, like, you know, U.S. history, that's a whole thing that's, you know, certainly evolved over the years, and, you know, we see that, and we feel as though, oh, you know, they're not as educated, but we ourselves, you know, almost prevent that because, you know, we kind of put you there, you know, it's, you know, because we are seen as, you know, because white people are more educated, you know, if we're following that stereotype, but the only people that perpetuates that is us, you know, because you two are obviously very, very highly educated, and it's wrong to look down on you just for your race, especially when we kind of put you there. You know, you know what I mean? It's, you know, you obviously have the strength and will to change your fate, but a lot of it, do you feel me? Like,
yes.
It's just, I think there's a lot of hypocrisy with white people, with looking down on people, but realizing, oh, we kind of put you in that place, and we kind of categorize you into that.
So with that question, I know you're from, like, this may come out, you're from a different, like, time period, I want to say.
Yes, when I was in school, we used quill pens. We didn't have paper.
It's all right. Change has to happen sometimes.
Well, I mean, things change over the years, and there's not much of a time difference between us, but with the small time difference between us, how was your experiences with, like, racial inequality and these other things?
I'll answer your question in just a moment, if I may. But just with respect to your remarks, I grew up in the segregated South. I was born in 1944. I'm 70 years old now. All right. I grew up in Miami, Florida. Every single school that I went to, in grade school, elementary school, junior high school, and high school, was a black school. Every single teacher, every single cafeteria worker, every single janitor, every single custodian, everybody in my school was black. Everybody in my community was black. The only white people I ever saw in my community were the insurance man, the guy with the fruit truck, and the mailman, all right? Everybody else was black. I have two sons who both attended Nottingham. And when I first took one of them down, he said, "Dad, I don't understand this. Where are the white people?" When I took him to my old neighborhood, I said, "Ain't no white people." All right, it's just us. So we had we went in a self-contained community that did certain things for us to make us who we were. Okay, but growing up in that neighborhood and in that setting, one of the things that was instilled in me and a number of my contemporaries was the following. You don't have total control over making people like you. You have total control over commanding people to respect you. So I said, hell, I don't give a damn if white people don't like me. But I do give a damn that they give me the respect that I'm due. And this relates to you. When I think about the college education application comes in, you say, I would like to have everybody know that I didn't come in through a side door or a window that they had specially open for color only. I came through the same door you came through, and when I have a grade average, okay, and you pit me against you, I am at least as good as, but probably better than you are. Okay? That's a thing that drove us. Okay, we have to command people's respect and admiration, not only white people, but black people too. And the way to do that is to excel at what you do. Do what you do well, people will respect you. And most of the time, when people respect you, they begin to like you. But we say, we don't give a damn about whether you like me. It's the respect thing that counts. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Okay? There it is. So the buzzword, though, is you can push yourself to excel. You can train yourself to kind of do every single venture that you undertake. You're going to do it with zeal and vigor to achieve. All right? And if you fail at this, right before you draw your dying breath, you will know mine was a life well lived and worth living because I tried. Okay? That thing kind of transcends a lot of the racial inequalities. I mean, that's the world out there, but the portion of the world over which I have most control is myself. So I want to do the kinds of things that make me proud of what I see in the mirror every day when I look in the mirror. I'm going to do the kinds of things that make an impression upon people about who my forebears were. I want to bring honor to their memory and to their name. And now there are more and more persons out there who are buying into that and causing changes to occur just from who they are and the way in which they carry themselves. It says you. All right, and that's you, and that's you, and that's you, and that's me. All right, so we will not see the end of racial inequality in the totality of our culture. We can expand the circle in which it doesn't exist, because it starts here.
And just like you said, these people expect this racial inequality to, like, break up. And I still see people, you know, color, they'll walk around the hallways, they'll act disrespectful, they'll do this, and then when they get in trouble, it's because I'm black. You need to, like, I say this to all of them, like, you need to get it together. If you want to be respected, you got to do things that are going to make you respected. Like, as you said, you have to excel in what you do. I'm not everyone's purpose in the world is to be a scholar, is to do good in sports. At least try, and at least try to make yourself look decent. When you walk down the hallways, sagging your pants, cussing up a storm, disrespecting his mom, her mom, and everybody else, you look dumb, and that's why you're put in a group of people. So I think you have to get that.
Also, though, do you feel it that people also feel sort of like a pressure to conform to those stereotypes that people feel, oh, since I'm black or since I'm white, I have to act a certain way or I will be judged for that too?
You have no idea how many people have come up to me and go, do you listen to this rapper? Do you know so-and-so? Do you know this baseball player? And I just sit there like, great, great. Now I'm going to ask you about the Senate. Have you met so-and-so, the counselor from this state? Because it's like everybody assumes that because this is what, you know, the group is like, this is what she must be like. And there's this hypocrisy that comes with stereotypes. Because we all like to, you know, impose on other people and say, oh, you're white, so you must do this, or you're black, so you must do this. But we don't say, oh, I'm black, so should I be doing this? We don't question ourselves, but we'll be quick to say to other people. I've had people ask me about rappers, and it's just, everybody assumes that, hey, she probably knows so-and-so. Do you know a Daquan? Do you know a Keyshawn? No, I do not know a Keyshawn. But I'm glad you asked, because now I'm going to look for a friend named Keyshawn. But it's just like, everybody pretends that it's just it's okay for me to ask. And now there's this one trend that I'm just fascinated by. It's like switching stereotypes are now being addressed as a cool thing. It's like a special thing. If you look at now, the in thing is listening to rap. Rap music is being listened to by very wealthy people. And if you are not wealthy and listening to rap, you are lost. You're just completely lost, because that's the norm that we're doing now. And the printed shirts that before used to just be, that's very ghetto of you, are now, this is the fashion, this is what you're supposed to be wearing. So it's like the trend switches from this is what they used to be, and now we're, it's like another culture is absorbing a different person's culture, but not for the same reason. It's just, it seems cool to do this. If you look at dreadlocks, if you look at Afro hair, that's being, you know, taken in as, I'm going to do this because, hey, black people do it, and I'm white, so it looks fantastic. And it's just the same thing. We're doing the skin lightening because we want to look lighter, but it's not because somebody made us do it. It's just we chose to do it. Nobody's making you, you know, nobody said go out, do this, or otherwise you're not going to fit into the world. It's just we choose to do it, and there's like this hypocrisy that we're not willing to address it, but we will do it in action. And when we're confronted with it, or somebody asks you about it, you shy off from answering, and you call that person racist. Once somebody demands an answer as to why you're doing something, instantly the word racism just flags into people's head. Why are you asking me why I do this? Are you racist? Why are you asking me why I listen to this? Are you racist? Once somebody demands an answer behind, or somebody demands an explanation behind an action, the word instantly just flags up.
And as you said, with the now the new like white kids or other races trying to do like the black trend, in a way I feel like they're mocking it. Like when I hear some of the kids speak, they're like, yo bro, ha ha ha, like that's not funny. Some people, like there's Ebonics and that exists, like ain't is actually a real word, but it's not proper English, but it's called Ebonics. And what you have to understand is some people actually grew up that way. That's all that they know. It is not their fault, and it's not wrong, because America has so many different groups of people, and so many different languages are coming here, and so many different like cultures and cultural diffusions are coming here. So you have to understand that there's no such thing as the right way. There's just different forms of things that exist here.
What you're referring to, I believe, is a lot of cultural appropriation by white people, because I mean, what happens is some white people will adopt trends and make them cool, you know, and once white people normalize them, people are like, oh, it's okay, it's normal, like, you know, and that's not right, you know, because there are a lot of like emerging white rappers now, and there's an argument over whether they should be held, you know, as highly respected as the African Americans who have been rapping forever, because it's an African American genre, you know, it started in that community, but you know, it's people were afraid of it, sort of. I mean, you know, there's always been a lot of people who've liked it, but you know, it, you know, as soon as white people start to like things, it's like okay, and so I just think that's interesting. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about racial inequality with our guest Judge McKinney. I'm Dana with co-hosts Yanira, Kyla, and Domi, and you're listening to Teen Talk.
Got a problem and need someone to talk to? Call Contact 24 hours a day at 315-251-0600. Calling Contact is free, anonymous, and confidential. If you want to join our conversation, find Teen Talk CNY on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. You can also call our listener comment line at 1-800-245-TEEN. That number again is 1-800-245-8336. We'll be right back.
The views and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to the host and guest. They do not reflect the views of the Teen Talk program or Contact Community Services. Welcome back to Teen Talk. I'm Dana, your show host, with co-hosts Yanira, Kyla, and Domi. We've been discussing racial inequality, and our guest has been retired Syracuse City Court Judge Langston McKinney. Before the break, we were talking about racial inequality in America in various forms, and I think now we should definitely discuss how we can change our own thinking about racial inequality and what we can do in order to change the future of it.
Well, we do teen talk shows at our local teen center, the Canteen, And we had a woman come in, Ms. Lettinger, and she told us that one of the first steps to improving how we think about racial inequality is admitting that we are all a little bit racist, at least a little bit. And then people will start to realize, what can I do to make myself seem less of that to other people? And it just kind of builds up and snowballs. And so what do you guys think some other steps can be to improving this issue?
Well, I think a really important step, as it is to find the solution with any issue like this, is to understand the history behind it, as we've addressed earlier, why it exists, understanding the different forms it's taken on and how it's evolved, from slavery to, you know, the Jim Crow laws to, you know, the 60s and to now, and how we see it today, and understanding the history and understanding why it happens, because, you know, I mean, that's the step, that's the first step any of us can take. And then, you know, really looking within ourselves and admitting that it has not gone away and it won't go away anytime soon unless we really just reflect and, you know, start within ourselves, because, I mean, we only have control over our own viewpoints and the ideas that we project in the world and, you know, in ourselves, and then make a change with our own ideas.
Well, now that I'm learning about all this other stuff, it's honestly made me grow a hate. And just like something that someone mentioned earlier, if you can hate, you can love. So I feel like we can all sort of try to find a connection with people on a more spiritual level, rather than like just appearance and what other people have. So like Mr. McKinney did before we started the show, we did our hobbies and the things we have in common, sort of. So if we embrace those things about each other more so, then there'll be like a better and higher chance of acceptance, because maybe one person does something you don't do and you want to do that. There you go.
I mean, personally for me, I think under changing the inequality differences and making America an equal for all countries, for all races, takes a lot of understanding. It just, there's a lot of misconceptions and misunderstandings that come with racism and inequalities. We first have to understand how this came about to be. Before you change something, you have to understand the problem. Before you form a solution, you have to understand what exactly is going on. How did this come to be right now? I mean, we can talk about the revolutions, the slavery, and we can all talk about the conflicts and the slavery laws that came in, but we really need to just like look deep and find out how this came to be. That way we can understand how to change this and how this can go about. Because when we look at racial inequality, it's just the plain honest truth is just that one side of the group, one side of the players got favor, you know, favoritism, they got extra power, they got privileges, and it stayed that way. It's really hard for whatever group that is in power to just let go of those privileges. It's not going to be that easy. Generations and generations have grown up believing that this is our given right. This is it was bestowed on us. We deserve this. They don't know why they deserve it. They don't know how it was bestowed to them, but they know that it's theirs. Snatching that away instantly will be a struggle. We need to understand, we need to find, like, it's not just something we can sign a treaty to and say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to sign, you sign here, you sign X, and you sign over there, and we're all going to be equal. We're not going to argue about anything. We're going to have equal privileges. We're going to have equal opportunities. It just needs a lot of understanding amongst people and doing it the right way. The right way might be different for some people, but the right way certainly would involve a method that's going to last it forever. Because this thing is just going to morph into something else. It's going to change from, oh, we're going to be equal, we're going to have equal education, but it's going to morph into something else in the future. Maybe it might be something like getting a driver's license might be, you know, might get some prejudice in getting a driver's license. Or in the future, retirement might be the issue. But it's just going to morph into something else if we don't address the bottom line of what's actually going on.
I feel like you just kind of described our country's history. They signed a document like, we're all going to be equal. And it's morphed into another problem. We're re-experiencing racial inequality. So that's like funny you said that.
Yeah, it's morphed. And it's like I said, it's taken on different forms. You know, we think like, oh, the Civil Rights Act movement happened. And so we're all equal now. And it's great, you know, those amendments guarantee your rights, but, you know, I mean, it's one thing to write something down on paper and another thing to act it out and live it, so.
I think they're all, there's a vast array of nuances of racism that exists in this country. We, all of us, collectively, cannot eliminate them all. We can't. That's the reality. Mm-hmm. And my perception of things is different from yours based upon the experiences that I've had and in comparison to the experiences that you've had. And it's like that with everything. But one of the places that we can start, if you want to change the world, the place that you can change most readily is yourself. And magical and wonderful things start to happen when you start changing yourself. The world miraculously changes around you. That's the God's honest truth. So you can wake up every day and say, when you look in the mirror, I'm proud of what I see, all right? I also recognize myself to be part of a world that's filled with humanity, of persons who are like me and who share some of the same needs and concerns that I have. Therefore, they deserve at least some respect for that. And I will earnestly try this particular day to extend myself in love and compassion with every person that I deal with. If I fail, tough, but tomorrow's another day. I will never ever yield on my efforts to do that. And a good day would be the day in which I recognize in others that that person is special, that person is special, that person is special in some way, shape, or fashion. And that specialness makes me want to respect them more and yield some of the privileges that I enjoy that they don't enjoy to them because they have earned it because they're special. So I mean, we can't tear down the Great Wall of China at one time. We take one brick out at a time, but pretty soon, well, no, not so soon, but at one point it's not gonna be there, all right? We don't have all of us the capability to tear it down. But we can, in effect, dismantle this institution of racism by chipping away at the bricks that provide its foundation. I agree, we have to have some understanding and appreciation for what it is, why it is, and how it's been through the years. I think most Americans just don't realize the depth of the institutionalization of racism that has occurred in this country. It's there. It's reality, but a lot of people are writing about it now because of the internet. A lot of people are becoming more and more exposed to the kinds of things that everybody should know about in a historical sense, right? For example, do you know a guy by the name of Thomas Jefferson? Do you realize that he was a slave owner at one time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you also know that he grew tobacco?
Yep.
You know that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that he deliberately stopped growing tobacco so he could start trading in slaves exclusively? The hell with growing things out of the ground is more money in growing people and buying and selling them. Thomas Jefferson. All right? You say, well, they were doing this back then. It was a lucrative thing to buy and sell people in these United States. All right, but you can familiarize yourself with that. This is not Langston McKinney on history. This is the truth.
Yeah.
Okay. So we all of us can commit ourselves to learning more about other people, other cultures, and the more you understand that the world is very, 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 very diverse. That there are people around who don't share the same beliefs we have. There are people around who don't do all the things that we do. That people don't look like us, dress like us, think like us. But they're all human beings and they all have their own worth. And my worth becomes more when I learn more about other people because I'm part of the parade of people who inhabit the earth. rightfully. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. McKinney. Well, I think it's time for us to go around and share our quotes today. So, Yanir, why don't you start us off?
My quote I got from a show that I was watching last night. It was Oprah Winfrey's Where Are They Now? And it was the social edition. And the quote is by Jane Elliott, who was a school teacher. And she was teaching the kids about this thing called the eye color. I believe it was the eye color test. And she would treat all the kids differently based on their eye color to teach them about how it feels to be a Black American in America. And the quote is, racism is a cancer on our society. We are going to have to work at getting rid of it. If we don't do it and do it soon, it's going to destroy us. And yeah, I chose that because I felt that it's very true. And being that I experienced racism myself, I connected with it, and not just for myself. I know how terrible it feels. I don't want anyone else to feel it. So I agree with what she was saying.
My quote was by Nelson Mandela, somebody who I truly admire in every way possible. No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People learn to hate, and if they can learn to hate, they can learn to be taught how to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. This for me is very important because if you think about it, as children learn what they pick up. They grow up, you know, with morals that they pick up from other people. You don't learn how to hate. You learn how to cry. You learn how to eat. You learn to sit up. You learn how to, you know, behave properly in the public. But hating is something that you physically and emotionally have to see going on somewhere. It might just be a tiny thing as a parent's not scolding a child when they treat another child unfairly. From that, it grows and it develops into something bigger, and eventually it morphs into something else. So it's very important that we understand that to change this, we have to start at the very root, and if possible, start as early as possible in children so that it does not develop into something that we cannot control in the future.
My quote is from women's suffragist Alice Paul, and it's, look into your own heart, I promise you, mine's no different. And I feel like this is important because you have to realize that people aren't defined by their stereotypes. People are people, no matter what they look like on the outside. And everybody wants to be treated like an equal. Everybody wants the same things in life. And I feel like people just need to realize that before they judge other people, because everybody has the same heart. If you really look down deep into it, everybody wants the same things for themselves and to be successful and be loved and be equal.
Yeah. Awesome. And my quote was said by Thurgood Marshall, who was a former Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. And he said, I wish I could say that racism and prejudice were only distant memories. We must dissent from the indifference. We must dissent from the apathy. We must dissent from the fear, the hatred, and the mistrust. We must dissent because America can do better, because America has no choice but to do better. And that just really struck a chord with me because it's really to the point and like just calls people to, you know, it's very urgent and it pretty much goes along with everything I personally always preach about racial inequality, which is, you know, they're not distant memories and we need to not be apathetic to it. We need to address it. And I think we can all agree that that's one of the most effective ways to combat it. That wraps up our show for this week. Be sure to join us next time. Thanks to all our listeners, and a special thanks to our guests, former Syracuse City Court Judge Langston McKinney. I'm Dana with co-hosts Yanira, Kyla, and Domi. Background production for the show done by Kathleen Reed.
You've been listening to Teen Talk. Be sure to tune in again next week. For show announcements and other information, find Teen Talk CNY on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening and have a great week. Teen Talk is a production of Contact Community Services and is made possible by a grant from the Offices of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Services.